Good morning, everyone. You're listening to the World Teacher Programme for Share International New Zealand on Planet FM 104.6. Each Friday morning, we bring you information from the teachers of the Ageless Wisdom. The purpose of our programme is to introduce Maitreya, the world teacher for the Age of Aquarius. Maitreya does not come alone. He brings with him the Masters of Wisdom, a group of highly evolved teachers. They work in many fields and can teach us the art of living, how to live in right relationship with each other. With their inspiration, we can transform our civilization, creating justice and peace for us all.
Good morning and welcome to the program. I'm going to read to you today a three-part article on life after death. This was written by Benjamin Cram and is sourced from the October, November, December 1982 editions of Share International magazine, and it was actually prepared by our Wellington group for their community radio program. In part one, Mr. Cram explains the events that take place soon after death. One of the great tragedies of our present outlook on existence is our attitude to that recurring event which we call death. We approach it, for the most part, with fear and loathing, seeking by every means to resist its call, prolonging, often beyond its usefulness, the activity of the physical body is a guarantee of life. Our dread of death is the dread of the unknown, of complete and utter dissolution, of being no more. Despite the vast amount of evidence gathered over the years by the many spiritualist groups that life of some kind continues after death, despite the intellectual acceptance by many that death is but an awakening into new and freer life, in spite of the growing belief in reincarnation, notwithstanding the testimony of the wisest teachers down the ages, we continue to approach that great transition with fear and trepidation. What makes this attitude so tragic is that it is so far from the reality, the source of so much unnecessary suffering. Our fear of death is our fear that our identity will be obliterated. It is this which terrifies. If we did but realize and experience that that identity is an immortal being which cannot die or be obliterated, our fear of death would vanish. If, further, we realise that after so-called death, we enter into a new and clearer light in which the sense of our identity is altogether more vivid, and also that there are yet higher aspects of our being of which till then we are unaware, which await our recognition, our whole approach to death would change for the better. We would see death and physical planned life as stages in an endless journey to perfection, the death as the door into far less limiting experience on that road. Freed from the confines of the physical world, our consciousness would find great new vistas of meaning and beauty hitherto denied it. In the time immediately ahead, the masters and their disciples will teach the truth of that experience we call death and open up for all a great new freedom. We will learn to accept death for what it is, restitution of our vehicles to their source, in other words, ashes to ashes, dust to dust, and liberation into new and meaningful life. The death of the dense physical body begins when the soul withdraws its energies from its vehicle. And this can take place over a longer or shorter period of time. A series of heart attacks or an illness which becomes steadily graver could be the sign that the soul is beginning this process. As soon as death takes place, the subtle bodies, so the astral or emotional, and the mental bodies within the etheric vehicle, and the etheric, by the way, is the higher levels of the physical, which we at this present time are unable to see, when these bodies withdraw from the dense physical body. This too can take place quickly or more slowly. But the masters advise that one should wait for 3 days before burial or cremation to ensure that the etheric body has completely withdrawn from its physical counterpart. The individual consciousness concerned is then left in the etheric body, which in its turn will also be discarded. The particles of substance making up the etheric vehicle will then stream back into the ocean of etheric energy which surrounds us. And for your interest, scientists give this the term of dark matter, and that's something they're trying to explore at present. The speed of that disintegration process depends on the individual's karma. When the etheric vehicle has been cast off, the astral or emotional sheath gives the person consciousness on the astral plane, where he or she will remain for a time on one or other of the 7 astral planes, which best corresponds with his or her astral nature. There, he will once again have to deal with the desires carried over from his earthly life, and often remain so enmeshed in these that life on that plane becomes a reality to him. If the consciousness is very much focused on the astral or the emotions, with very little mental focus, then such a person could remain on the astral plane for a long time. Long to our way of thinking, for outside the realm of the physical plane, there is no such thing as time. On this astral plane, one does what normally one would have done in incarnation on the physical plane. And though life on the astral plane is a fact, as it is a fact on the dense physical plane, it is nevertheless only an illusion. All our hopes, fears, and aggression, our hatreds, jealousies, and vices form powerful thought forms which must, sooner or later, be dissolved. Therefore, the only hell which exists is that which we have created ourselves on the astral planes. The hell which we encounter is the hell of our own desires, our atrocities, our own separation, and our own grudges and fears which inhabit the astral realm. This is the principle behind the advice that the masters always give, to learn to control our thoughts and emotional reactions. For that reason, it is also important to raise the consciousness as high as possible at the moment of death. In the future, people will be taught how to die consciously in order to do this. When a person has achieved a certain degree of mental focus, he will not stay on the astral plane for very long, for the astral vehicle would by then be relatively refined and harmonious. It will be able to dissolve more rapidly so that its particles can return to the reservoir of astral matter or energy, as did the etheric vehicle to the etheric plane. Incidentally, all these planes, the etheric, the astral, and the mental levels, are only sub-levels within the cosmic physical, and are, of course, really states of consciousness. It may explain it better were we to say that the masters are conscious on cosmic physical, cosmic etheric, cosmic astral, and the cosmic mental planes. If a person is sufficiently evolved, sufficiently mentally focused, he will spend some time on the mental level, where the mental body will give him consciousness on that plane. Dependent once again on the level to which that person has advanced would be the length of time spent on any of these levels. For more advanced people, existence on the mental plane would be the last experience before coming into incarnation once again. And here in part 2 of the article, Mr. Krem recaps and explains the subtle levels above the physical. For most people, the greatest fear of death exists in their expectation of loss of identity and consciousness, of loneliness and cessation of contact with family and friends. Far from experiencing such a loss, the dead man finds that, freed from the limitations of the physical vehicle, his conscious awareness is heightened immeasurably. He sees both ways, the world of forms which he has just left, and the new world into which he has come, with familiar people around him ready to welcome him into that more liberated state. At the same time, he can still tune into the feelings and thoughts of those left behind. So, far from being a traumatic experience, death for many is so gentle and smooth that they do not realize that they are dead and require the help of those whose task it is to acquaint them with this fact. After the death of the physical body, the individual concerned remains on those astral planes which correspond most closely to the point of development attained by him in physical life. On those subtle levels, our faculties of perception become freed from the process of thinking and reasoning which function through the physical brain. All knowledge and experience can be directly seen, heard, felt, and known in their full significance. There is instantaneous perception, knowledge, and beauty, and a type of joy and liberation such as we cannot know on the material plane. The experience on the mental plane is obviously of a more mental kind. Here it is less a matter of rapture than of knowledge or wisdom. Not only the rapture, but the great significance and meaning underlying it can be known on that level. So someone sufficiently evolved, intuitively aware, understands this, and also the purpose and the will of what we call God. After experience on the astral and mental levels, these bodies too will be dissolved in due time, and the individual concerned will then live in a state of what's called pralaya, and this is a non-mental, non-astral, non-material state of existence, somewhere between life and death. It is a state of being out of incarnation where the life impulse is in abeyance. It is a state of unending bliss and experience of perfect peace. The soul comes into incarnation in accordance with group purpose and the plan. It is a great sacrifice for the soul to descend onto the physical plane and take incarnation, which takes place under the self-sacrificing will of the soul. It is possible to remain in pralaya for a few dozen to thousands of years until such time as a group of souls is sent out of pralaya into incarnation because the time is right and the circumstances suitable. The soul body, or also called the causal body, gains experience in this manner. The causal body receives more soul knowledge, soul consciousness, as its vehicles become more refined. If the person has made great progress, his or her bodies will subsequently be more refined, akin to the vibration of its permanent atom, and due to the magical working of the soul, will increasingly attract matter of a subatomic nature. The permanent atoms of an individual are not influenced by experience out of incarnation, but are connected to the causal or soul body. The causal body is a sort of reservoir of all perception, all knowledge, and all experience of the physical, the astral, and the mental realms. And the causal body is the receptacle where this consciousness is accumulated and stored. It's just to be found on the highest of the four mental levels. And at the beginning of subsequent incarnations, when the vehicles are ready, the soul pours its energy from the causal body into its mental, astral, and physical sheaths. The accumulated knowledge and experience gained over a succession of previous lives pours down from the soul level to the physical brain, which retains as much as it can consciously absorb, use, and know. This knowledge cannot really be tapped until the brain centers have been sufficiently awakened to be used in this way. Where this does occur, we have what we call a genius. In the soul is mirrored the monad, or also called the spiritual will. Buddhi, And that's the spiritual intuition, and manas, which is higher mind. A genius is able to attune him or herself to the soul level and to that of manasic or Buddhic consciousness or thinking. So in part three of the article, Benjamin Cram explains incarnation. The important factor in relation to the incarnational process is that we incarnate not individually, but in groups. While, of course, individual incarnation does take place, it is only incidental to the greater event of group rebirth. This group rebirth proceeds cyclically, according to certain laws governing the manifestation of energies or rays, and connected also with the point in evolution of the groups involved. The question has often been posed about the length of time between incarnations. Great deal of information has been published on this, much of it erroneous and necessarily speculative. The fact is that there are enormous differences in the length of periods out of physical manifestation, both of individuals and of groups. Some souls have an extraordinarily rapid cycle of incarnations, while others spend aeons between each incarnational experience. The masses today are largely focused in the emotional astral vehicle. For them, the less advanced, the period out of incarnation is usually short. Being young as egos, they still have much to learn and are drawn magnetically into physical plane life by the thought forms which bind them to the earth plane and by the karmic ebb and flow which has arisen on earth. They do not have much say in the matter themselves, but under the law of evolution, they are psychically impelled again and again to incarnate, to learn and to experience, and by trial and error, pain and suffering, to make eventually the free choice, the conscious return out of matter back to spirit and liberation. Those who are somewhat more evolved tend to stay for a longer period out of incarnation due to the fact that they have not created such strong earthly ties and are more flexible, freer, with more mental focus. Also, they need more time to absorb and assimilate because of their richer personality experience, that which can only be taken up and assimilated on the higher planes out of incarnation. Each generation brings into incarnation a group equipped with knowledge and ability to deal more or less with the problems of that period. In this way, the plan is gradually developing and unfolding through the work of successive groups coming into incarnation again and again. Groups who may well disappear out of incarnation for aeons at the end of an era. Each soul incarnates and reincarnates under the law of rebirth. Groups of souls come in together in order to work out karma created in the past. Hence, this law provides the opportunity to repay ancient debts, to recognize and work with old friends, to accept ancient responsibilities and obligations, and to bring to the surface for reuse talents and qualities acquired long ago. What beauty and order there is, therefore, in this law which governs our appearance on this plane. To summarize, we can say that reincarnation depends on the particular destiny of the individual. If he or she is not sufficiently developed, there is no destiny as yet, and the individual is simply drawn back into incarnation. When the man has progressed somewhat further, his destiny becomes a group destiny. In the case of a disciple or initiate, however, the cycles of incarnation are governed by his individual destiny and, above all, by his or her desire to serve. So that was a slightly abbreviated version of that article, originally published in the 1982 issue of Share International magazine. Hope you enjoyed it. And if you'd like more information, check out the website share-international.org. And any queries or comments, you're most welcome to email us at sharenz@yahoo.com. Wishing you all a lovely week.